What's happening, cocksuckers? The church is brought to you by Onnit. For all your supplement needs, go to onnit.com right now and press in
church.
Bam! And get 10% off, and the stuff gets delivered right to your fucking doorstep. Number two, Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody, all right? Cooking together brings a strong family bond. Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often than most bummy families. Anyway, right now, go to blueapron.com and press in
Joey.
And get...
You get your first three meals for free and with free shipping. It's great. You get your first week for free.
There you have it. Blue Apron.
Get down, get down, get down.
Kick that muley. Oh, shit. Black people jumping up and down. I love it.
Get down, get down. Get down, get down. Get down, get down.
Chris D'Elia.
Yo, yo.
Rosh Hashanah boy. The original Christ killer, Lee Syatt.
Hello.
Shit. Wednesday, the 20th of September. Halloween's around the corner, cocksuckers. What's happening, you bad motherfuckers? Uncle Joey here, Chris D'Elia here,
yo, what's
Lee
up?
Syatt here. Fucking great to have you on the show.
I'm happy to be here. I'm happy I was asked. Dude, that song takes me back to actually, like, hearing that takes me back to high school, which would be the second time that song came out again, right?
Right, the second time. It was like a reissue.
That was that's fucking crazy how music can do that, dude. I used to listen to that every day.
Did you like that album, the movie, when it first came out? You were in all in?
Yeah. No, not you?
I fainted.
What do you mean?
I can't see fucking needles
really?
And blood. So that heroin scene, I went down. The girl on a date put a raisinette in my mouth to wake me up, and I came back too. So I never really finished
that's
the fucking movie.
That's a good raisinette
movie.
Commercial.
Yeah. Then I went back when I lived in Seattle and I watched the whole thing. And now whatever's on, I watch it.
You know what? Honestly, Pulp Fiction is one of those movies, I think, that if you watch it now, it's not as good because so many fucking filmmakers and movies have copied that now it's like so annoying and old. So it fucked it up for watching that movie, which was the original version of it. Do you know what I'm
right.
saying?
Yeah.
Like, you'll watch all these goofy movies like this, and then you'll watch this movie and it'll be like, ah, fuck, it's another one of those movies. You know what I mean? Like, kids would see that shit. But it was the first of its kind, right?
No, it was. I thought it was great. I didn't know who the fuck he was.
Yeah,
and I thought it was great. Then I think I went back and watched True Romance or something. Or
Oh yeah.
That came out. Yeah. He had a few movies, and they're great movies. Even now, you watch True Romance, it's fucking crazy.
They're fucking awesome. Yeah,
it's fucking crazy. You a movie buff?
I mean, nah, I would say no. My brother sees literally everything, but no, I'm not.
How many brothers you got?
I got one brother.
Sister?
He's younger. No sisters, no.
And what do you mean he watches everything?
He just watches everything. I mean, first of all, he's a filmmaker, a writer-director, but so he thinks it's his business, but he also loves it. Yeah. But he'll see, I'll just be like, yo, if I want to know if something's good, I'll just ask him, even though he fucking hates everything. You know, he's one of those guys. But yeah.
That is a weird thing with people in like the film and TV industry. Even when I went to school, like everyone, like you get there and like I was so excited to start film school. You're like, what's your favorite? Like every time you have a talk about movies, unless it's like Breathless or something black and white, they're like, oh, that's terrible. It's garbage.
Yeah.
What the fuck is Breathless?
It's a French movie.
Yeah.
From like the
I remember that. I had the fucking VHS because I used to like love like all that. Like I was a huge, still am, John Cassavetes fan. Like I would watch all his movies and I'd watch them over and over again when I was like 23. And that movie, my dad gave me that VHS and he was like, you got to watch this one. And I never watched it just because it was so, it's like so black and white and so fucking one of those movies.
Yeah, it's not,
it's not an easy movie to watch.
It's like the 20s, I would think. Yeah. It's one of the first ones. It's fine when you're learning the history of film, but like there's, I don't know.
It was like made with like a Lumiere or whatever the fuck those cameras are.
Right.
Hit me with some Cassavetes movies.
Woman Under the Influence was tremendous, a big one. Tremendous. My favorite one was Husbands, which not many people saw, but
I haven't seen
it. It was my favorite one. When I was, my dad had a VHS copy of it, and I watched it, and I loved it. And you couldn't even find it back then. You can probably find it somewhere now, but it was so, like, it came out in, like, either, I think in the, either 79 or like early 70s or something like that, or maybe 80, but it was so good. It was about three dudes. One was Peter Falk, Ben Gazzara, and the other one was John Cassavetes. And their friend dies, and they basically decide that they're like this funeral was bullshit. They didn't even say anything personal about him. So they go out and they kind of like have a night or two of debauchery, and they just don't go home to their wives. And then they end up in Paris, just kind of like being like these fucking, you know, dudes that are trying to deal with their friend's death. And it was so good because it was so funny without being, it was just like being a guy. It's exactly what it's like being a guy. I thought that movie Husbands is to me the best movie that I've ever seen because of that. Because it doesn't try, and they're so funny, but they're obviously friends. And Cassavetes had a really good way of doing that. But I even like Killing of the Chinese Bookie, which everybody fucking hated. But I love that movie. I love Ben Gazzara. Ben Gazzara is the shit. When there's a scene in the Killing of the Chinese Bookie where he's in a limo, and the whole scene is him sitting in the limo, and then at the end of the scene, he just says, "I'm terrific." And that shit, like, I'm howling when I watch shit like that. And Cassavetes was so good at that like machismo male kind of shit.
That was his shit. That was his shit. That's what you love capturing.
Yeah,
he liked that tough guy.
Love that shit. So he was always my favorite.
Did you ever see Ben Gazzara in that fucking movie with Spike Lee?
I don't know.
With the 44 caliber killer, where they have to go to him. He's the mob boss. He was playing John Gotti.
No.
Like an off-color John Gotti.
Uh-uh.
In 44, in that stupid fucking movie that Spike Lee did, which I enjoyed the movie. I'm just saying that.
I don't know. What is it?
44 Caliber Killers.
That's what it's called?
Whatever that dude that killed people in New York. With fucking
John
Leguizamo.
Sam? Was that Summer of Sam? I saw that. Yeah. Ben Gazzara's in that?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Ben Gazzara is who they go to.
Okay.
The mob boss that they go to try to get this help.
Oh, okay.
And he's like, look at this.
I enjoyed that movie.
He's like, look at this. For years, you go to the police.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now you come to me and sit down, boys, have a little spaghetti, and he fucking invites him down, and you're like, Jesus Christ.
I love that shit, that Italian shit.
You know what's another scene that I always thought was a brilliant scene that had no comedy involved? But just the whole scene is hilarious. Goodfellas, when they go to the mother's house.
Oh, yeah, forget it.
You're sitting there with your mom, mm-hmm. but there's a guy in the fucking trunk. Just that alone.
Yeah.
That alone. And I could see, like, we got to get in the trunk. We got to hurry up.
Yeah.
Fuck no. They're pouring ketchup and salt and pepper and asking her for seconds and shit.
Yeah.
Then they ask her for a knife. Ma, we got to borrow a knife.
Yeah.
You know, that whole scene.
Yeah.
After, like, the first time you watched it.
To chop up that body.
Yeah, you didn't know how you felt.
Yeah.
But now if
that
it comes
movie
on.
I fucking love, yeah.
If it comes on, you watch that scene and go, that is fucking hilarious.
My favorite movies, and this is what Cassavetes did this really well. My favorite movies, I don't know, maybe this sounds dumb, but you don't have to watch it from the beginning to the end. You can like turn it on and it's on, and you can watch like 35 minutes of it, and like Goodfellas is like that to me, you know, and I like those movies because it's less about the what happens and more about the characters, you know.
It's so funny when you get home and Goodfellas is on, even if it's on a pay channel.
Yeah,
I always watch to see what time it started. So if it's 10 after 10 and it started at 9, that means the Billy Bat scene is right around the corner, because it comes in at an hour 15, an hour 10 commercials. They cut them in a couple fuck yous. I always, if I look to see what time it starts, if Billy Batson come on, I fucking watch Billy Batson. That's a shame, he died last week.
Oh, yeah.
That guy, like,
yeah,
he made his career. Like,
I know.
Like, people say, well, you don't want to, what's the expression people always say in LA? Like, you don't want to get a, what's that?
Typecast.
Pigeonholed.
Yeah.
Well, he never played a priest.
Right.
Like, he never played nothing else but a fucking gangster. Like, that's what you hired him for. I think in Do the Right Thing, he played the guy in the car.
That's a movie I've never seen.
Do the Right Thing. Yeah. Never said, it took me fucking, there was two movies that it took you years to sell me. Do the Right Thing was the first one that took years to sell me. Lethal Weapon, I refused to watch it.
Oh, I fucking love Lethal
Weapon. Now, I love it.
Why? Why didn't you want to see it?
I don't know.
The trailer, maybe?
I just wasn't in a fucking mood.
That's so funny.
I was into drugs and getting my dick sucked. Yeah. I was taking 12 credits. I had no time to watch fucking a black cop and a white cop. Right? And then I had a warrant out for my arrest, and I couldn't leave the house, so I had to watch movies. So I said, fuck it, this is a good time to watch movies when you got a warrant. So I went and I got fucking Lethal Weapon and Above the Law. Steven Seagal's first movie. And I fucking, you know, I've always loved Mel Gibson. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. You know, people have bad nights. They say shit when they have three drinks. They do. They just say shit when they have three drinks. And that's why you and I don't drink. Because we don't want to say dumb shit out of fucking public.
With a microphone in your hand.
So, but I love, you know, I loved all that shit. I fucking enjoy, like The Godfather.
Yeah.
There's a lot of bad mob movies, but there's a lot of good.
Well, that's what happened. Well, exactly what I'm talking about. They fucked it up. There were a few good ones, and now everybody thinks they're going to make the next fucking Godfather, and then it's just like put a bad taste in your mouth.
Well, the problem was, too, The Sopranos was just that good.
Yeah, it was so good.
The Sopranos took it to such a level that they explored every avenue.
Yeah.
So even if you were to write something now, what are you going to fucking write? Look at these humps. They're getting together to do another mob movie.
Yeah, that genre is so done.
It's done. It's done. They can't sell it.
Yeah.
And every time I get an audition and it says Gino, Gino, Rocco, I just turn it down. Mm. If you're still talking about
Gino,
because
you know it's going to be bad, or done. Yeah.
It's done.
It's done.
So that's the fucking thing. But I'm a movie guy, too. And I like the guy movies. I like Cassavetes, the killing of a Chinese
boy. Yeah, I loved that movie.
Jesus, I haven't seen that in like 10 years. And it was just on about 2 or 3 months ago. It was on late night on HBO.
Oh, really?
Somebody had it on late night.
Yeah, I have all those DVDs, man.
What made you understand them?
I just always assumed I would do it.
Since you were a child.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I always, like, my dad tells a story where when I came in the room, he was watching a Jerry Lewis movie, and I walked in the room, and I was playing with my toys, and then I looked up, and I saw him being goofy and just being silly, and I stopped and I looked at him, and my dad, like, you know, registered that I was watching him, and I said, and then I turned to my dad and I said, hey dad, is that that man on TV, is that his job? And he said, what do you mean? And I said, like, is his job to just make people laugh? And my dad said, yeah. And I said, huh. And I said, and he makes money doing that? And my dad said, yeah, as a matter of fact, he makes a lot of money. And then my dad said, I went like this, huh. And he was like, that was the moment where he knew that I registered, like, oh shit, like, you can do that. I wanted to do that because I was already like a cut up, you know what I mean, even though I was a little kid. But yeah, I never imagined I wouldn't be a stand up.
There's a scene in Nutty Professor.
Yeah.
When was the last time you watched
that? So long ago.
Next time you get a minute, there is one scene in Nutty Professor when he goes to the psychologist's office and he goes in.
I don't remember.
Oh my God, Lee. And it's goes in with a suit. Like, he's a fucking nutty guy.
Right. The only thing I remember is the working out scene.
Yeah. He's like, but now he's like smooth, good looking. He's got like a fucking tuxedo. Yeah, he's smoking a cigarette. His nails are done. And he goes in to see this guy and he goes, Doc, I got a problem or something. I think I got two personalities. And the guy, the guy gives him something. The guy says something to him. Or he goes, Doc, the last time somebody told me that, they gave me a bill for $42. He goes, the guy goes, what'd you do? He goes, I gave it to the other guy and told him to split the bill, 21 or something stupid.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I fucking died. That's the only part I like of the fucking Nutty Professor.
I don't even know if I like that movie or not. It's probably so dated though now, right? You know what I wish they would fucking do and that they don't do anymore are like the Naked Gun or the Airplane movies. Those movies, to me, nothing funnier. And they don't do them anymore.
They don't know how to do
them. I know. Weren't they trying to
for a while?
They do, like, the version of it now is like what? Is like the scary movies and shit. Which is just different. It's not even the same. And but like the Airplane movies and the Naked Gun and that shit, I don't know. I feel like people think that's corny now, but fuck that. I love it.
Even Cannonball Run.
Oh, The first one.
The second one was corny, but the first one was good. Not, they've forgotten how to do that. We were watching Lenny Bruce before the show.
Yeah.
To stand up. You got a camera, I put it on you watch a fucking stand up.
Yeah.
What have they done to stand up now?
Cut it all up.
22 fucking cameras. We put a camera on top.
Yeah.
To show the bald spot on you. Who gives a fuck? Just show me direct. Cut me up at the waist. You don't got to show them going like this. They can hear it.
Yeah.
We've just...
Not to mention the fucking cranes are so distracted when you're on stage.
When you're on stage.
They're so distracting. You don't, like, you probably don't think about this at home, but, like, when you're on stage and... There was an eye line on my last special where I was looking at it like where I always look this way, and I didn't realize that I've been doing the act for a year and a half, and I didn't realize that that was where the crane's going to be, and it's just so fucking distracting. It fucks you up sometimes.
And for the audience too, because then like there's a crane in the audience.
And it's so bright too when you do a special. Where'd you do yours? Your last one?
Chicago.
Where?
At the Zanies.
Oh, yeah?
And the other one.
Rosemont.
Oh, yeah.
Rosemont.
Yeah.
I like Zanies Rosemont a lot. They're blue collar.
Chicago's awesome.
Yeah, the one downtown I bomb.
Really?
I go down there just to eat a bag of dicks at Zanies down there. They just stare at me. The one in the fucking suburbs, they bring knives to stab themselves to stop laughing. You know, the one down there is like a fucking...
I can't imagine you bombing. That's hilarious.
It's a fucking nightmare. There's some clubs that...
It's weird, right? Like, maybe it's the room or some shit?
There's some clubs that I think at first I used to go, you know what? It's me putting shit in my own head. It's me going, I don't like that room. There's some rooms you just fucking die at that. The wall, something is not.
I still don't know. I've done stand up now. It'll be 11 years coming up. I still don't know sometimes. I don't know if it's because who's that? The Seinfeld, that's like, it's never the room. It's never the audience. It's always you. I just don't know if I believe that. I don't know if I believe that. Maybe it is true, but like maybe sometimes you bomb and you're like, I think it's the audience. How is it me at this point? I've done this for so long. Do you know what I'm saying? What do you feel?
I don't know if for example with comedy movies, not even stand up. If you go on like an opening night, like I saw Borat opening weekend with a packed theater and I was dying.
It's going to be bonkers.
People were falling out of their seats.
Right.
You watch Borat at home, whatever.
Well, it's not going to be like that.
And it's not as funny. It's just, so I don't know if maybe like some rooms, I don't know, maybe the people in one area were bad. So then everyone around them in a 10 table radius gets weirded out. Or maybe there was a lot of traffic coming in. It's a weird... There's a lot of external things that, because I've seen Joey do his act hundreds of times and it changes, but I've seen it in succession and there's different nights that go better than, like, we had you changed the set a little bit, but you did the first show and the second show, and the second show for the special was a lot better than the first show.
First show was just a fucking nightmare.
So it's a...
Really?
First show.
You put a lot of...
Dude, I had the first show on my last special. It was a nightmare, dude. And I was like, what? I literally afterwards was like, my career's over.
I thought so too.
It's so dumb to think that, but like you do in that moment. I had the mic was cutting out and shit. And I was like, it was one of the first times where I was like yelling at people, like in my career, where I was like, what the fuck? Who can I yell at for this? Like I'm yelling and shit. Yeah. And then the second one went well. And then when I rewatched them, the first one, because the mic was cutting out, I had this energy where I was like, no, motherfuckers, not today. And we used a lot of that shit because it was way better.
Way better.
So you never know, but yeah.
And it was interesting. We had one of our friends watch the set, and I think they said something to the effect of, and it might have even been the last one, where the crowd isn't that as into it, you... Like, the way you told the jokes was a lot more like the way that you had prepared it.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when the audience is going crazy, maybe you ad-lib a little bit more. So it's better in the room, but then...
Totally, dude. That's 100%
true. 100%
true. Dude, when you see some of these guys that fucking murder at the Comedy Store, and then they have a special, and they're like, okay, this is my special. Here we go. That's a bad vibe, man.
I have it.
Really? Because here's the thing. Here's the thing that you got that I think like comedians have to realize is when you're doing your special, you're in the room and it's the energy of the room that's feeding to this moment. But you have to remember that people are gonna be watching this shit here. They're gonna be fucking. There's close-ups of your face. So if you're amped up doing this shit, it's not gonna read at home. You're gonna look like a fucking asshole. I remember thinking that because of something I did. because I've been acting. You know what I mean? I've been acting since I was 16. And I remember whenever I would do some shit and then see it, I would see it later on TV. I'd be like, oh, that's what that looks like? I moved my face too much. Do you know what I mean? And I'm very animated as it is on stage. So, you know, you are too. So you got to think about that shit, like about your face. And like, I've seen people fuck up their specials because of that.
Well, for my case, it was completely different. In my case, it was that I went in there thinking I was Seinfeld. I'm not Seinfeld, dog. I'm Joey Diaz.
Yeah.
Why are you fucking doing Seinfeld? Who the fuck are you to go up there and do your jokes?
Yeah.
Precisely.
Right.
I went up to the second side and I go, that's it. I went back there, I smoked a joint. I even smoked a cigarette. I don't smoke cigarettes. I smoked a Marlboro Light just to bring me back a little bit. And I changed it all up.
This was your second show for your second show?
I was focusing on the words. Not focusing on the
words. Stop focusing on the fucking words. I know.
You know, they always said that Marlon Brando didn't know the words in The Godfather. Yeah. He didn't know his lines. But he knew the character.
Yeah.
If you know the character, the words would come out.
Yeah.
I was going up there trying to be Seinfeld, trying to be fucking monologist, trying to be what's the guy that developed the Chappelle
David.
Show?
Oh, Neil Brennan?
I was trying to be Neil Brennan. You know, I'm not Neil Brennan.
Yeah.
And then the second show, I was like, hold on, slow that down. This is who I am.
Yeah.
It was a complete different ballgame.
I saw it.
Even though they did use some stuff from the first show.
Well, because you don't know how it comes across. But yeah, you get in your head and shit. It's hard. When you're shooting a special, it's fucking hard. Because they're like, this is it. This is fight night. This is what I've trained for. You know what I mean? And it's hard to, even though when you get on stage, you hope to fall into that rhythm to where like, okay, I've been doing this for years. But it's still hard to not fucking think, okay, this is what it is. This is the moment. This is what the world is going to see. Potentially millions of people are going to see this. People that don't know who you are going to see it. And be like, fuck this guy. You know what I mean? Yeah, so.
Billy, I had the weirdest thing happen to me during my special.
What?
Ready for this?
Yeah.
First special I bombed. First taping. I go inside. I comb my hair. I smoke some pot. I get my head together. I come out. Fucking first 20 minutes is gold. I'm home free.
God, oh, that feels so good.
Guess what happened?
What?
These two fucking jerk-offs.
No.
Right in front of me, started fighting.
What?
A girl and her boy.
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
Listen to
me. And you did it at Zany, so it's intimate, so.
He was like this at the thing. And he's hammered, and she's embarrassed as fuck. She's a sweetheart that brought a loser boyfriend.
Yeah.
She was probably coming by herself.
Right.
And then on the way out, I'll go see that loser with you.
Right.
And now he came and was, you know, he was saying shit. Dalia, I positioned my foot. I swear to my mother's grave, bro. There was one point, like the 24-minute mark, that I watched the special and I could see it
really?
In my face. I even positioned my thing, and I was just going to kick him in the face and end it. My career was going to end.
Yeah, I get it.
Right there.
So you saw it on stage?
Oh, on stage. They're fighting.
Oh, no.
And I'm on stage, and I'm watching them, and I finally gave him like a look, and I went back, and I didn't want it to see on my face.
Yeah.
I was sweating bullets that my career was going to come to a fucking end.
Yeah.
And I go, you know what? I'm going to position my hip. And I'm going to kick him right in the fucking face once and for all.
Yeah.
But in the middle of this thought, I go, Joy, get it together. Focus.
Yeah.
And I went
How
back
crazy
to
is
it.
That? And you're telling jokes during all this.
And
That's
I'm telling
so
jokes during this whole thing. Yeah. And then at the end, I was going to go out there and just choke him to death. And then the staff came over to me, and they said they didn't know what to do.
Yeah, I know, right. He's right up front.
What would happen if they approached him, and now we have a fucking argument, and now I'm on stage. So that's what happened. I was about to kick this fucking guy. Right in the fucking face. And then the guy over here said something to him.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Said, hey, bro.
That could have gone either way. Together. Yeah.
And I just said, oof. No, that was one of the worst nights of my fucking life. That I wanted to kick him in the fucking head.
I get like a lot of like, this shit drives me nuts. I get it at shows, but like when you're shooting a special, I get a lot of these, woo. And you're like, all right. I don't need this shit for it. You're stepping on my punchlines with woos. Do you know what I mean? These chicks. And they think they're liking you, which they are, but it's like, you're just going
to
be on the
fucking... I used to have a girlfriend that was a woo, and I couldn't bring it to the comedy store.
When people go woo, are you out of your fucking mind? What are you doing? Laugh or don't laugh. That's all I ever want. Don't laugh. You're going to woo? What the fuck are you on?
Woo!
You know how fucking stupid you got to be to woo? You know how fucking stupid you gotta be to woo? You know how fucking stupid? I don't give a shit. I honestly don't give a shit if you're at a fucking Angels game. You're a fucking moron if you woo.
I fucking hate it. I never understood it. I never got it. So I never got the memo on the woo.
Whistlers at your shows? Like the people can do like I can't even do
the
it.
Thing, yeah, that like or whatever the fuck.
Right.
But the thing about that is at least that's only going to be in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, nobody's going to do that shit. If you do that shit in the middle, I'll fucking walk out and strangle you. But if you, I'll get my openers to fucking do that shit. I get my opener to come on stage, I'll walk out and strangle you. But like, yeah, the woo thing happens like every fucking 4 minutes sometimes.
Oh, no. They just, I've noticed that on at some shows, like they have like a, instead of a laugh, they have a go-to either saying or noise or they clap real loud. It's really... It's odd.
Did you see that? Have you seen this is great. Have you seen that Eddie Murphy's on stage? It's like, I don't know what it's from. It's an outtake. I don't think it was on any special, but where he's
oh shit, doing,
and then Charlie Murphy's some girl says something, and Murphy says, "Shut up, bitch." And you hear it, yes. And it sounds like Eddie Murphy because it's his brother. What is that from? Dude, that shit killed me.
I just saw it.
That's
like a month
so
ago.
Funny. Yeah, it went viral like somebody last month or something. God, that shit is so funny. Like right away, just shut up, bitch.
Before, when I was telling you, there was two movies I refused to watch.
Yeah.
Leave Do the Right Thing? Yeah. No. Harlem Nights.
Delirious.
Oh.
What is it?
It was in Delirious.
It was?
Yes.
Yeah.
They cut it out, Delirious.
Oh, okay. Oh, fuck, that's killer.
I would not see him. And then I took a sociology class and they made me watch Do the Right Thing and I fell in love with it.
Yeah. I haven't seen it.
And then the other one, Harlem Nights,
I haven't seen that one either.
It was just going to be a bunch of black guys fucking talking shit.
How am I going to relate?
And oh my God.
Yeah.
It's a fucking masterpiece. Huh. Richard Pryor's great. Yeah. Eddie Murphy's great.
Yeah.
The chick is great. I mean, it's a fucking great movie. Red Fox is fucking killing.
Yeah.
But no, I wouldn't watch those fucking movies at all. I'm not watching that shit. Do the Right Thing, it comes on once a month and I watch it. If I get home, Danny Aiello, John Turturro.
Yeah.
It had a great
It's a good cast, yeah.
It's a great cast.
Wait, not to be boring, but where'd you grow up?
North Bergen, New Jersey.
Okay.
But I had a lot of action in New York City. Yeah. Like when I was growing up, I was right next to New York City.
Yeah.
So I was there half the day.
Right.
So to get drugs, you got to go to all those fucking crazy spots, and you just can't get drugs. You got to buy a slice of pizza and park the car.
Right.
So I got to see all those places in Brooklyn and the Bronx. And
yeah.
So when I watched Do the Right Thing, it just taught me how, where I came from, it's 19 different nationalities talking about one another. But at the end of the day, they make it work. Yeah. That's what Do the Right Thing's about.
Hmm.
About a black guy going to a liquor store and it's owned by a Korean.
Yeah.
And he tells him, I want batteries, and the guy can't pronounce batteries. Right. So he goops on him. But at the end of the day, everybody gets along, you know. I was in shock when you said you were from Montclair.
Yeah. I know.
Mom, dad, everybody.
Yeah. Well, my mom is from Newark, and then my dad's from Queens.
Damn.
Yeah.
And how did they end up in Montclair?
So they met at Ithaca. They went to Ithaca
College.
Yeah. And then, you know, they wanted a place that was good for us
kids.
You know what I mean? So it wound up at Montclair.
It's a great place.
Yes.
I don't know how it is now.
I don't either. I heard it's awesome. I heard that they got that theater now. I guess Dice was just there. They were telling me when I was doing the Stress Factory. But they got some theater there that's great, apparently. But it's Montclair, Upper Montclair. They got fucking great houses, man. You can, I don't know. Back then, you can get them for a price, but now, I don't know.
No, yeah, no, you're in no fucking.
Yeah, probably
danger.
Not.
I used to play flag football out there. I think I played like 5 games because who the fuck is gonna get up Sunday at 8 a.m.
Yeah,
when you're 19, and those are the worst days. You play flag football, you get up Monday, you think like you got hit by a truck.
Yeah,
but there was a guy that was 5'8", and he was like a middle linebacker, and he sold cars, and he was very sweet. And we used to call him Black Sam. That was his name, Black Sam. Turned out he was Sam fucking Mills. He ended up playing for the New Orleans Saints, and he ended up being the smallest linebacker of fucking all time. 5'8".
That's hilarious.
Middle linebacker.
Dude, that's crazy.
Crazy. We were playing flag football with him. He's like us.
That's funny.
Did you have a flag football? Where did you play flag football?
There was something in Montclair, like a stadium, and there'd be 4 games at once, like a park. So there'd be 4 games at once, just a bunch of 19. You know, it's a men's league. You put 2 flags. The line you could tackle, but you can't use your hands.
That's funny. Know? When was this? Like what year?
This is 84.
Hmm. Wow. Dude, that's wow.
84, that's 83, around there, 82.
But how fuck it... And I know this is... I mean, this is so... Like, this sounds so... well, I don't know how it sounds, but like I was, the fact that you were there in 84 playing flag football and I was four in the same fucking town and now we're sitting here doing this fucking podcast, that I think about that kind of shit, that trips me out. Like, that's so wild how people fucking connect, and okay, they were right next to each other and now they're, you know, buddies and shit.
Rogan hangs out with Eddie Bravo. Mm-hmm. Eddie Bravo's got a black belt.
Mm-hmm.
Black kid. Nicest kid in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He makes his living telling people he's Brazilian. And he makes fun of him and he talks Brazilian.
Eddie Bravo's black?
No, his friend.
Oh, the kid. Gotcha. Okay, yeah. I was like, what the fuck?
We're talking one day. When I came from Cuba, I got beat up at Central Park.
Yeah.
My mom put me in karate. His father was my karate teacher.
No, that's fucking...
That's 50 fucking years ago. I'm 54.
That's insane.
That's 50
How do you even figure that out?
We just started talking. And
wow.
He goes, well, how did you get into jiu-jitsu?
Yeah.
My father was a karate teacher. Really? Where? New York City? Where? 90th Street on Upper West Side on Amsterdam. Are you fucking Mr. Orange? Yeah. Oh,
no.
Shit. How do you know my dad? I walked in there when I was five with a black eye.
Wow.
And he fucking took me and made me run and punch the bag. And
that's crazy.
So those type of connections are the weirdest fucking ones. So weird. When, and now they have, don't they have that thing now on, which I kind of like. I mean, I'm not on Match.com, but I saw the commercial for it.
Yeah, where you walk by them.
You can walk by people.
Oh, yeah, I heard about it. What is it?
I don't know.
It's kind of weird, but it's like if you are like, in a certain area with somebody, yeah. And maybe, I didn't use Match, but it's probably like if you're in an area with someone and then you also both like certain things, like similar things, maybe they'll tell you. It's called, they're ripping off Craigslist. It's called Misconnections.
Yeah, Misconnections, right, yeah.
Misconnections on Craigslist. Yeah. I don't know if anyone ever found anybody, but there's a section on Craigslist where it's like,
yeah, people have definitely been killed on it.
You
for
were
sure.
in Starbucks today wearing a yellow hat, and I wish I said hi.
Yeah, but and people have met on that for sure, though.
Have they really?
Yeah, because that was like a big thing. Like, what was it, like, I don't know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, where people were making fun of.
Yeah, before the social media came out, really.
Yeah, yeah.
So, what made you get to stand up at the age of 25?
Yeah.
Why so late?
Well. Okay, I think it's this. Like, I always wanted to do it. That was always the goal. But I just figured, and this is really stupid now that I am a stand-up. I know this. But, like, I figured, like, it's so hard. Like, I was like, why don't I get credits first? And then this way, stand-up will be easier, which is the literally the worst fucking person on stage did that. And so, so I just worked to try and get jobs as an actor. I wasn't getting dick. So at a loss, I was like, all right, fuck it. I'm not getting any younger. I might as well start stand-up now. And then I was like one show in, I was like, oh my God, I wanted to do this. I want to do this forever. So weird. But and I wanted to do it forever, but also I started when I was 25. Like, how old were you when you started?
29 or 30. Yeah.
So I can't.
28.
So I can't imagine starting earlier than 25 because like, I mean, these guys like Chappelle and like Bill Hicks and all, they started when they were 15. It's like, I don't know what the fuck I would have even talked about.
How crazy is that? I used to go to Washington Square Park on Sunday to get Valiums. And I would go to McSorley's Alehouse and I would stare from McSorley's. I could see the circle around Charlie Barnett and Dave Chappelle as a kid.
Wow.
I told Dave that. Like,
really?
20 years ago when I first met him. I go, Dave, I used to watch fucking... Charlie Barnett, to this day, is one of my fucking comedy, the guy that he studied.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know who he is, yeah.
He was, when he was on Miami Vice, I thought he was fucking hilarious.
Hmm.
His stand-up was Men's and Men's, you know, they still have tapings of him at Central, at Washington Square Park online.
Yeah.
And it was pretty funny, just the fact to go to a park and do that shit and run around and talk to different people.
So Chappelle used to do that?
Chappelle would be there opening up for Charlie Barnett. As a 14 or 15-year-old or something.
That's fucking crazy.
Now, did I know he was Dave Chappelle at the time?
Right.
Not a fucking clue.
Right.
He was this skinny black kid that did comedy with the guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's all I knew. I went home, and then over the years, somebody said, that's the guy. And then one day at the Miami Improv, like in 98, I go, so you were Charlie Barnett, and he was telling me he was trying to develop. They were trying to develop something with Opie. Whatever his fucking name is, about Charlie Barnett, but I guess it went.
So what would they do? They would like stand, like they would be out at the
Click It League, Charlie Barnett, Washington Square Park.
Like they'd stand on a table or some shit.
They would stand in the middle of a circle.
Oh wow!
Under a fucking like little bridgey thing,
and just do talk shit,
in front of 100 tourists.
That's wild.
And ask for dollar bills or whatever the fuck they did.
Really? Yeah, I've never seen this. I heard about it, though. Yeah, dude, somebody's got to do a documentary about this thing.
Yeah, this is just brilliant.
We got a nice crowd here. I love a New York audience. I mean, look at this crowd. We're in the Village. I love the Village. We got a nice mixed crowd. I mean, look what we got. We got white folks. We got black folks. We got Puerto Ricans. Puerto Ricans. Puerto Ricans. We got a lot of fucking Puerto Ricans. But I'm not gonna fuck with the Puerto Ricans, man, because y'all born with knives. Right? You'll cut me up and I won't even know what you're saying. Mira, mira, casino, epa. And when you finish, you go, que pasa, bro? Because I got into a fight with a Puerto Rican kid and I was winning. I was bouncing around like Sugar Ray Leonard. I was bam, bam, bam. He was only about that tall. Then all of a sudden he went like this. And I was surrounded by a small Puerto Rican family of 4,000. I like everything, man. Let me borrow it, okay?
Dude, this is fucking amazing, dude.
I like pocketbooks. I love pocketbooks. I like the way white women walk with their pocketbook when there's no Negroes around. I don't see no niggas. And you know what else I like about New York? I like the way different nationalities go to work. Everybody goes to work different. For instance, Caucasian businessman. I need some white people glasses.
Look at this. This
white
is,
people glasses. Right
is this
there,
a special?
Right there.
They just taped it.
Yeah, what is this? They're like cutting to the audience and shit?
Damn, you can't see shit. I can touch my dick. How do white guys go to work? They got their briefcase? I can walk just like the white man going to work. Watch this, white guys. I love when they stand on a corner and go. And how do black folks go to work? We be talking about, fuck it, I should get there by payday.
Wow, this is amazing, dude. That's fucking insane.
I do Puerto
He's got to have 500 people there.
But it's like, it's what's crazy is like he's got to project. Do you know what I mean?
I'm only kidding if you're Puerto Rican. I like Puerto Ricans. And y'all fuck a lot. You have babies like Jiffy Popcorn.
But like you couldn't do it this way in a club.
No.
You know what I mean? Like that. I talk about like knowing the room that you're in. You got to like adapt to it. And it's just interesting to see somebody have to do it outside like this because of that.
Now fuck with me. You're Japanese or Korean? Oh, you all look alike. Don't worry, I'll be talking about niggas in a minute. In a minute, you'll be going, oh, nigga, funny now.
Hey! Can you imagine us doing this every Sunday, and this is what you build? Yeah. And that's, people are telling like agents, you got to go down there and
see
this guy.
Yeah, like, that's fucking insane.
This is it.
And look at that, 250,000 views. So Chappelle used to open it for that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
If you go to the top one.
Wow. How long did he do that for?
You got next time you see him.
How the fuck do you start that?
We're calling you just like a spot to see me.
Yeah, we got like a Hong Kong spot. Hey, Dave. No, You start out in the street, right?
Watch how long a flight is it?
Yeah, how do you know?
I'm Tony. I just look at Charlie Barnett.
You know, oh, Tommy Barron?
Yeah, how you doing?
The fire guy?
Yeah, how you
look
doing?
Look at this. This is like love right here.
I don't remember you.
Yeah, but
you and Albert and everybody.
Yeah, because I went back to New York. I saw you in the Bout, and I was amazed.
Yeah, you and what's his name? They used to ride the unicycle.
That was
the
unicycle.
Yeah, in Washington Square Park, man.
Washington Square Park.
We're on Bridge Street. I do pap. I quit drinking and smoking, so I do pap work. Just be high, you know. And we
really?
They said you were here. And we want this coming in right now, Britney Spears, she'd be in about 20 minutes. But we didn't care.
You want to come meet her?
We didn't care. You were coming in, and I had to get you.
How long a flight is it from Hong Kong, man?
Good seeing you, man.
I don't know. It's a fantastic.
To burn up before the flight? You burned one before the flight, or no?
All right, how about the other guy asking a stupid fucking question? Yeah, how long is the fucking Google it?
Yeah.
He was the greatest. Hey, no problem, man. I know you guys gotta make a living too.
Huh.
Yeah, so he was like a young kid, and he'd go up there. I don't know the exact story.
Yeah.
But I remember being up there, and they're like, it's not just him. He's got a couple guys with him, and then years later.
To create that, in Washington, was it Washington Square Park?
Yeah.
It's just crazy. Like,
I know. You know, there's a couple guys that could do that. I could never do that. Go outside and do comedy.
And I've seen, like, I grew in Boston, they have Faneuil Hall where they have street performers. I've seen a bunch of street performers, and they all have, like, I think a lot of them are amazing. They do juggling. Yeah. They have a lot of acts, but I've never seen anyone do stand-up.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen it.
No.
Yeah.
Now, the other guy goes down. Isn't there a guy in Venice Beach?
For stand-up?
Really?
Yeah,
really?
For years. Collier. His name was on there also.
Huh.
Because he was, like, a big-time Venice Beach guy for fucking years. He would come to the store and he'd stand outside and people would walk and say hello to him. Hmm. He wasn't a TV personality.
Yeah.
He had just been to Venice Beach for so many fucking years.
That's, wow, that blows my mind.
You know, I left the store for 7 years. I woke up one day and I go, this just isn't for me anymore. I've been coming here 6 days a week for the last 7 fucking years. You know, Mitzi's great to me. I stopped going to the store. There was some shit going on down there. I just said before this blows up,
right,
I'm getting the fuck out of here. And I just went on my way. And
what'd you do, by the way? Where'd you go? Like, were you doing the improvs or what the fuck?
I got the improvs. I had a monthly show at Brea.
Okay.
I had the ha-ha.
Sure.
I had different rooms. At that time, there was all these comics had different rooms all over L.A. Mm-hmm. So I just did that. I missed the store. And then I started, Jamie called me, he goes, come to the Laugh Factory. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I would talk to Ari. Ari would always tell me about you. Wait till you see him, you don't like him.
Oh, cool.
And then I went down to the fucking Laugh Factory one night and I saw you and I went home, my head almost exploded. I'm like, this fucking kid is animated, I gotta get in shape to hang out with these youngsters. I can't just go up there and hold the mic no more. Because I hadn't been over that hill no more. Huh. I never really did the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
I was either improv or comedy store guy. Jamie never liked me.
Huh.
I only used to get spots Monday nights when Gilbert booked the room.
Yeah.
So when he called me to go back there, and I started watching him coming home going, fuck, that kid's good.
Thanks, man.
He's jumping up and down out there. I got to lose some weight. But like people always go, well, before I go to jiu-jitsu, I got to lose weight. Well, before you go to the store, you better lose some weight, dog. Because they got some youngsters down there.
There's some animated guys now. I mean, honestly, look at Sebastian. He's the most animated. But I feel like... But you're animated in your own way.
In my own way.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You're not jumping around, but you're fun to watch. You know what I mean? Like, it's like some comedians, they could cut an album and you don't need to watch them. You know, and it works. I don't know if my shit would work, but it adds to it to watch you. Do you know what I'm saying? I always like that about stand-up.
Me too.
You know what I mean?
I'm an original room guy too.
Yeah,
it's
favorite room in the country,
the
man.
The nuts and bolts in that place. Like you, I could still bomb in there.
Yeah.
But it's really hard for me because I know all these cheap tricks in there.
Yeah.
To throw your voice in there. You can do 1,000 things in that room.
Yeah.
But if I need to go off, that's the room. That's the room that if I go off and have a heart attack and die, I don't mind.
Huh.
Like, as they're dragging me out, I won't be yelling. I'm like, at least I did that my favorite spot.
Yeah.
It's not like I was bombing in fucking, what's the other improv in Chicago? That's a boar fest.
Schomburg.
Schomburg. I've never played it at Schomburg. Really?
That's 4 days that you fucking...
Really? Why? Because it's in the middle of nowhere or what?
It's in the middle of nowhere. So you have to... Like, everybody who performs is like, I'm going to Chicago. I'll be in Chicago at night. You're like, no, you're not. You're in fucking Schomburg where fucking death goes to die.
Jesus.
Like, that's where death goes to die. Like, that's how... So, like, if you die, if you're going on... Like, every time I went into that room, like, I wasn't getting no love. Like, you're fighting for every fucking lap, so you got to kick it up a little bit. So if you die in there on the way out, you're like, I hate you motherfuckers.
Right.
But if you die at the store, you're like, this was great.
I know, it is. It's weird how
this
that
is.
Yeah. It's weird how that is.
What, like, you just said it was like your, the, one of your favorite rooms in the country, and we're talking about how different rooms affect you. Like, what is it about a room that makes it?
Here's why I think favorite. The Comedy Store is my favorite room, at least one of them, because it. I think it's the only room that I know that I've played that's built for the comedian, and every other room is built for the audience. Like, you go to the Laugh Factory. You walk in, you're like, oh, you watch, you, as an audience member, you're like, oh, here we go, it's show. Every other place is like that. But the Comedy Store, there's that light on you, you can't see the audience, you might as well be fucking anywhere. And it's built for the comedian in that way, which makes it much harder because the audience isn't going to give it up if you're not fucking real, you know? So that's why I love it. And it also, it has a sense of like, there's like this like, I don't remember who said it, but like, there's a sense of this, and this sounds pretentious, but there's a sense of like danger there, like somebody's gonna throw something at you. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there is.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you walk into the Comedy Store as an audience member, you can walk in a good mood and walk into that room, and you're literally like, where's my seat? What's going on here? It changes your fucking mood, so it makes it harder, and you got to be on the stage as a comedian and break somebody. Of that, you know, now it's a little different because they got fucking TVs. Everyone who goes on is like famous from Netflix and famous from fucking Hulu, whatever the fuck, you know, it's a little different. They got you, Rogan, Sebastian, you know, David Spade, me, everybody's fucking on TV. So it's like, it's a little different now, but back when you, well, before when you were there and then when you left, like when I went in, I got onto the Comedy Store when you weren't there.
What year did you
start? I probably started going there 2008, 2009, and you weren't there.
2008,
2009. Yeah, no. And
wow.
And it was like, I mean, nobody was on TV that was doing that room. No. And of course, stand up became really hot, you know, after that. But then it was getting really hot. And then we started getting like good fucking comedians. Not that the guys weren't good, but we started getting guys that were recognizable, but also like, you know, like you guys came back, you and Rogan, and then Jeselnik would come in, and you know, and just guys that we weren't getting because there was a weird vibe there, you know, which is probably the same reason why you fucking left. And then it wasn't that vibe anymore. And, you know, Ali Wong and just the people, and Sebastian blew up and shit like that, you know? And then it became it felt like a brand where it's like, you know, almost like where how Def Comedy Jam is. It's like, oh yeah, I'll watch that. It'll be funny. You don't know who the fucking guys are back then, but you're like, yeah, I'll watch it. And then Chris Tucker exploded and shit, but it was Def Comedy Jam. That was like, it goes. Now people, I think, oh, I'll go to the Comedy Store. Doesn't even matter who's fucking playing, you know? But it wasn't like that. When you were gone, it wasn't like that at all. I mean, there were Friday nights where there were 30 people in the audience.
Yeah. How it was. Yeah. I was there too.
Yeah.
It was no different.
Yeah.
These numbers now are tremendous.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't go to the store a lot, let me tell you why, Chris.
Now?
Yeah. Let me tell you why.
What?
Can't work out.
Yeah, I know. You got to go in between two murderers.
You got to bring your A shit.
Yeah, I know. I know.
So it kind of hurts I have to work hard on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because that's the people paying to come see you.
Right.
But you want the store.
There was a fucking charm to it.
Monday nights was 90 people. Thursday there was 10 because it was a Black Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So the white comics wouldn't even call in. They're like, why would I go down there to get muscled?
Right.
You know, I'd always call him because I knew Mitzi liked coast to coast guys. Mm-hmm. Mitzi don't like, well, give me Thursday early.
Right.
Friday at midnight. Right. Mitzi, all she wants to see is Sunday to Sunday.
Yeah.
That's what she wanted to see. So when you called in, you had to take the Tuesday lump. God damn it.
Right.
Eight people had to leave the union, which is filled with chicks. Somebody was giving out blow. Yeah, yeah. I got to run over to the store to do a 15-minute spot for eight fucking people.
Yeah.
But you needed the $15.
Yeah.
That was extra 15. So Wednesday was 60. Thursday was 75, 80. Yeah. And then after midnight, 18, strong till 2.
But that was, I loved doing that, man.
I loved doing that shit.
I would take those fucking 12:45 spots when I was coming up. They were the shit. There was nothing like that, man. And now you don't do those anymore. You don't do those anymore. You certainly don't do them in that room anymore. But, you know, you're not going to play. You would. But they're going to give you the 10:30 spot.
But
you know what I mean?
Let me tell you something. 13 people
yeah.
at 1 in the morning.
It's awesome.
When they've listened to every yep. fucking joke in the yep. world. They've already heard the Kardashians yep. 8 times.
Yeah.
They've already heard Copernicus yep. didn't get up. They already yeah, heard yeah. about the Rams. They heard about the Hurricane Elma. They heard about everything. You got to go up there at 1 o'clock, and whatever you were writing on that stupid yeah. piece of paper all day.
All been done 7
and
times.
You got to rip it up yeah. and just go up there, and that's when you get, Lee, you get so fucking good.
I honestly miss that, and I think about that all the fucking time.
Like just calling Adam and going, I want 1 a.m. every
yeah, but it's also week. It's also different now because like people know who you are and people know who I am. So if you're going to do that, it's still a little different. I mean, you're never, I always say like you're never, it is true though, you're never better than fucking trying to make 11 people laugh, you know? Like no matter how big you get, like they're still not going to laugh if it's not funny if there's 11 of them in a room. But still, it's a little different. It was cool going, knowing that those 11 people at 12:30 were thinking, who the fuck is this guy? And now, you know, even if 3 of them know me from whatever, you're not going to get that anymore. Do you know what I mean?
But there's nothing like whipping 11 people up into a fucking frenzy. Mm-mm. Jesus Christ, I love
it. The best. Sometimes it was 4 people.
4 people. And they're dying and you're yep. dying. And at that point, you just take the chair, sit on stage. You're like, fuck it, let me just sit and yeah. talk to you guys. Yeah. I saw so many. When I first started at the Comedy Store, I used to be kind of scared to go down there some nights because I never really knew what was going to happen. Like one night, Dave Tyree threw a bottle at Joe.
Oh, Jesus.
Another night, I was up on stage. Some girl walked up and said, take your dick out. And I go, before I take my dick out, you show me your pussy on stage. And she goes, okay. And Friday night, 12:45, original room.
Oh.
She
Holy
pulled
shit.
Her pants down to her ankles.
Oh, she
and
pants
then
on?
People started clapping. Joey, take your dick out.
Aye, aye,
aye. I had to take my nutsack out. Bobby Lee and Rogan on the side throwing money at the stage because Bobby was on Mad TV.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meanwhile, I told the chick, you can't pull your pants down.
Right.
You got to leave them down until I pull my dick out.
Jesus
so
Christ.
So she's sitting up on stage with her pussy out, pierced, with the piercing out. Like, it was nothing.
Yeah. Were you talking about your dick or something?
No, nothing. I just walked up
so
on stage. She was hammered.
Yeah.
She was with her boyfriend, and he, if you take out your dick, take out your dick. I'm like, take out your pussy, bitch. And she fucking ripped up that fucking pants and took them down. And when I turned around on stage, you know the patio?
Yeah.
They were all by the glass.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit. When I walked off
like
that
meerkats.
Night, I walked off with like $80. And I was happier than fuck.
Wow.
I did better than if I would have done material.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
they
of
went
course,
fucking
yeah.
nuts. I went every fucking night in the original room. There was this dude, Vinny Favorito, that would bring a fart machine in and put it under people's chairs in the original room. And then they would wait for Brian Holtzman to go up.
Oh, yeah.
And they would start pressing the fart machine, and he would go fucking crazy on stage. You never knew what to fucking expect at the store.
Yeah.
And now you don't get that.
No, you don't. Yeah. It was even like that in 2008 a little bit. But I mean, I'm sure it was even crazier back before that.
How much of it has to do with, like, I love Fenway. I don't want them to tear Fenway down. I'd still get to watch the Red Sox, but there's a feeling when you go into Fenway. Is there a feeling when you go into the?
Yeah, 100%. Like, yeah. I worry that what will happen to that place in the next few years. But I mean, now I feel like it's fine. But like, in 2010, we were all like, I wonder what the fuck's going to happen to this place because it was like a ghost town.
It was a ghost town.
Yeah.
It's really weird to see what happened. 2007 was even a fucking worse ghost town.
Yeah.
Like it was. I remember I was there when Paulie had a Halloween party and he served liquor in the parking lot. So the city closed the Comedy Store, no booze for 60 days.
Because he did that? Oh, Jesus Christ.
No booze till December 28th.
Oh, my God. That's like the good time, too,
so
for them.
From fucking November 10th to December 29th.
Oh, it must have been brutal.
Sodas. And you had to go up on stage for fucking a 2-soda minimum. No food. No food back then.
So, the audience must have been so light.
15 a
yeah,
night.
Oh, fuck. For fuck's sake, Jesus
15
Christ.
A night. People were running out, drinking from a bottle in the hallway. No booze for 2 fucking months.
Oh, my God.
Nobody remembers that.
No, I didn't even know that that happened.
Yeah, yeah.
When was that, 2007? Or before that?
No, this had to be 2001.
Yeah, way before. Yeah, it had to be way before that because I was this one.
The store was fucking dead.
Yeah, I heard that from, I heard that, that it was so dead in the early 2000s.
And I caught the tail end of the Tupac days.
Wow.
Tupac got into a shootout at the store.
No.
The bullet's still in there. They threw Eddie Griffin out for that one. They banned Eddie Griffin.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I never heard this. I'm a Tupac's my favorite.
Fuck yeah.
What happened?
Tupac got into a shootout at the store one night.
What? How have I never heard
Eddie
this?
Eddie Griffin invited him to the fucking store. While Tupac is in there, three bullets went off from across the street, and they blamed on Eddie Griffin. So Eddie Griffin got banned for bringing Tupac in there.
Are you shitting me?
No. True fucking story.
Holy shit.
Tupac used to go in there with Eddie Griffin.
Oh, man. That's fucking...
How crazy is that?
That's amazing, man.
I saw Mariah Carey in there one night with Eddie Griffin. I saw Mikel Welch in there.
Oh, so I fucking... I performed for two people one time late at night in the Comedy Store, and one of them was Dr. Dre. It was Dr. Dre and whoever he was with. And I was like, I don't want to go up. And they were like, and I think it was Don Barris. He's like, no, man, I know why you don't want to go up, but you got to go up. You're a fucking comedian. And I was like, you're right. I'll go up. And I went up, and I just had a conversation with Dr. Dre. And it was actually cool because then I talked about this on my podcast, I think. But after I got off stage, he was leaving, and there was there were maybe like two other people in the audience. It was like there was nobody there, and then they left, and everyone was like, "Hey, Dre, can I get a pic? Can I get a pic, Dr. Dre?" And he was like, "Nah, nah, nah," and he walked out, and he took a few steps past me out the Comedy Store patio, past the patio, and then I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna ask. Maybe like." He'll appreciate that I was on stage or whatever. And I was like, hey, Dre. And he literally, like a movie, stopped and turned around and looked at me. And I said, is it cool if I get a pic? And he fucking went, all right, man. And he walked back and took the pic with me. It was a cool moment because it was like in my head, I don't know, he probably didn't think this, but in my head, it was like, all right, like I respect that. Like, you know, I'm a performer and he was up there, went up for two people. You know what I mean? Like it was a cool moment for me that he said no to everybody, but then like came back for me.
Who else have you seen up there? Anybody else?
Just lately, I saw Quentin Tarantino. Mark Ruffalo was there recently with somebody else. I think he was there with Chris Rock. But it's just been Dr. Dre was the wildest to me. But there was one night there, now that it's popping, you know, there was one night there that James Franco and like Leonardo DiCaprio was going to be there and Elon Musk. They were all there together or some shit. So fucking weird. It's so weird now that you can go to the Comedy Store and literally end your career with a bad set with all those fucking people in there now. It's like some nights it's a fucking star-studded event.
I was in there when Tom Cruise came in.
Really?
To pee.
That's hilarious.
With
when?
Nicole Kidman.
Years ago.
Yeah, Sunday night, 13 people in the audience come on stage, and I see them walk into the thing in the original room, and then he ran up the stairs and ran to the bathroom. So when I came out of the thing, I go...
And you were on stage or no?
I was on stage.
Oh, wow.
And I saw what I thought was Tom
Cruise. That's
lurking,
funny.
And I fucking got off, and then I forgot about it, and I went into the bathroom like 10 minutes later, and he popped out of the shitter.
Wow.
Like, I forgot about it, and he said something to me. Like, he recognized I was on stage,
and
I said something back to him, and that was it.
Oh, wow.
And him
that's
and her left.
That's fucking cool.
I saw Bon Jovi in there, because his brother used to be the manager.
Who?
When I first started at the Comedy Store, Matt Bon Jovi was the manager there.
Really?
Yeah, he's running a strip club now in Atlanta.
Oh, my God. I didn't know
so
that.
So Matt Bon Jovi was the manager at the store.
Uh-huh.
So fucking John would come
Matt
in.
Bon Jovi. That's hilarious.
How fucking crazy is that? And he came in one night with that chick, the one that Brad Pitt dumped for fucking chick from
Friends. Aniston?
Before her.
Paltrow?
Paltrow.
Oh, okay.
He came in with Gwyneth Paltrow. They were doing the movies.
Oh, wow.
Whatever the fuck. They came in. Who else did I see in there? I saw some crazy fucking people. Chris Cornell.
Uh-huh. Wow.
1998, sitting in the corner with a hat on, not saying a fucking word.
Wow. Who was this? Somebody was there recently.
The guy from the Chili Peppers used to
always
go. Always the singer. Always, always, always.
Anthony Kiedis.
Anthony Kiedis. Yeah. Yeah, it's fucking weird, the people you see up there.
Oh. One time I got off stage, and this dude with a cast on is like, bro, you're fucking hilarious. Are you fucking? And I'm like, this fucking asshole. I'm like, thanks, man. And I look, and it's Shia LaBeouf. And I'm like, oh, shit. I'm like, what's up, bro? Thanks. my attitude changed. Such a fucking fake Hollywood moment. But I'm like, get this fucking guy out of here. Oh, you're in Transformers? What's up?
I'm surprised to hear you guys, because you've been here in L.A. for a while. I don't think you get starstruck anymore. But is it like exciting to perform for these people?
Sometimes. I mean, like I said, when you go on stage, it usually morphs into just another show because that's what you do. But like, yeah, sometimes, like, I remember when Dr. Dre was just like four people in a room. But like Quentin Tarantino, when he was there, I was like, oh, I want to do well because he's in there. You know what I mean? Or like if it's a comedian that like if Chris Rock is in the room, you're like, I don't want him to think I suck. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I can understand stuff the comedian like one, definitely.
But I don't know. You know what? I had a meeting once. This is so weird what fucking happens in Hollywood. Like, I had my agent called me. This was years ago, and they were like, "Hey, you. So Francis Ford Coppola is doing a new project. They don't know what it is yet." It's like a really long script. They might do a miniseries. They might do this and that. They're interested in Italian Americans, and Francis Ford Coppola's guy wants to meet you and kind of like see what you're all about. So I went in and I met with this guy, Fred somebody. He like produces a lot of his movies. So I met with this guy. We were talking about stuff. We just had a conversation, no reading, no nothing. And he was like, okay, cool. Bye. Then I get a call. Okay, so Francis Ford Coppola wants to come see you perform. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Okay, this is the weirdest thing ever. I'm like, all right, okay, what am I gonna say? No, like now I'm nervous now because Francis Ford Coppola directed the greatest movie of all time.
Right.
So he shows up and the whole comedy store is like, Francis Ford Coppola is here to see you? And I'm like, I guess so. I don't know what the fuck's happening, right? So he comes and sees me do stand up. And I get off stage and he leaves. He gets off. He came to see me. Weirdest fucking thing. So I'm like, what should I do? I remember my brother was there. And he was like, you should go say hi or something. So I was like, okay, I'll go up and I'll say hi. So I walked up and I was like, hey, I appreciate you coming. Thanks a lot. And he was like, oh, of course. Great job or whatever he said, you know. And then I did it. And then I got a call to do like a table read with Francis Ford Coppola. And I show up. I'm like, I don't know who's going to be in here. It was in a room as big as this. Okay, the table was almost as big as the room. The chairs were like, I mean, we had like this much room. It was Uma Thurman, Joe Mantegna, Liev Schreiber, Jason Gordon-Levitt. What's that guy's name? Jason Gordon. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's Gordon-Levitt. It's something else.
And
Joseph
Gordon-Levitt, and then Philip Seymour Hoffman, like 2 months before he died, and fucking me. I don't know what's going on. Nothing happened with it was a 400 page script that we read. It took 8 hours, and I'm sitting there with all of these stars, and I'm like, this is amazing. But by hour five, I was like, what the fuck is happening? Like, this is it was so, and I was playing like all the ancillary parts, like that were like all the parts that were like, yeah, I'll meet you over there. There's some shit or like pizza, you know, basically these parts. And it was so wild, man. It was all day. There was a break in the middle of it. It was like a break where like we were eating pizza and drinking a Coke. And it was just, it was crazy. And then Francis Ford Coppola signed bottles of wine and gave them to us. I gave it to my dad.
Did you get the part?
No, because it never became anything. It was just like one of these things that like all these Hollywood elite and fucking me. It was a weird, it almost feels like I dreamt it. Like, why the fuck? I still to this day have no idea why how I got involved.
Have you ever walked out of a room and said, what the fuck just happened?
Like in a Hollywood
way?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those, but it was.
What about going to the store,
uh-huh,
getting hammered till 2, doing drugs, smoking pot? You have a call back at 10 in the morning the next day on Sunset and Western for a fucking stupid Travolta movie. You get there,
mm-hmm,
and it's Travolta. And who directed fucking Drugstore Cowboy? He's still relevant. He does something every couple fucking years.
It is Jarmusch, Gus Van Sant.
Oh, yeah, Gus Van Sant. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're in the room at 10:05 in the morning.
And you didn't know?
Not a fucking clue.
Your agent's probably just like,
I'm going to producers. The other guy who's reading is Billy Gardell.
Oh, yeah?
So Billy and me were fighting for the fucking same role. Wow. Then they decided to give us both the role.
Uh-huh.
Just to be two stand-up comics, or Travolta's a singer.
What movie was it?
This is called The Jimmy Roselli Story.
Huh.
3 months of casting, contracts signed after the holidays, and the call January 3rd that said Travolta...
It's not happening.
Not happening. He's doing the Scientology movie instead.
Oh, Battlefield Earth?
Battlefield Earth.
Wow. And
that's why we didn't do Jimmy Roselli.
Wow.
But it's shit. Another time I had to be going to Be Cool. Same thing.
Yeah. You were in that, right?
No.
Oh.
I lost it. The guy died who they gave my role to.
Jesus.
That guy was great, though. He was a great guy. I forget.
Huh.
He was. I did a Chaz Palminteri movie, and he was in that movie, and we shared.
Uh-huh.
Like it was like a big trailer. Like just, I only had like one line,
so I
said, just sit with him. He made me feel like I was fucking Brad Pitt.
That's cool.
I had one fucking line. I threw a guy off the pier, and he was in there, and he was on a show on CBS for a long time. Great character actor. I go down to fucking Be Cool. I walk in, and there's the little guy. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia with fucking Travolta again.
DeVito.
Oh, wow. I'm like, I hate doing this shit.
And you didn't know again?
No, they don't fucking call you and tell you.
I know. That's hilarious.
I was telling Ellen Lardy, and I remember reading for The Sopranos producers, and, you know, like, it was just, I was here in 97, so it's 2001, and I'm in the room, and this is all you could hear.
Yeah.
From my handshake, from the fucking script. Those two times were script shakers also.
Wow.
I hate when they call you with that fucking, and you get there and there's somebody completely different in the fucking room.
There's
eight people, and you're like, what? When I got a call one day, and they go, hey, man, are you available to do table read tomorrow? Sure. Okay. We'll call you back later. They call back again. Are you available tomorrow? Yeah. We'll pick you up at 1. Pick me up. And they're like, oh, by the way, we're going to do the table read. And then you're flying to fucking Santa Fe to shoot the movie right from the table read. I go, are you serious? So I packed my bags. Again, I don't know Dick.
Yeah.
I had $35 to go to Santa Fe and 3 cigarettes and 2 joints.
Wow.
They picked me up in Hollywood. A car picks me up. I tip the guy the 20, so I'm down to like $15. Yeah. I walk in the fucking room, and the first person I see is that chick, the old lady who's getting real famous now for being, she showed her tits to Greg Garcia. Remember he was saying that she's in Raising Hope?
Oh, the older lady.
The older lady. She's in there. I'm looking at Michael Irvin. When I did The Longest Yard, they told me it was Snoop Dogg. They go, the movie's got Snoop Dogg in it. That's all we know so far. Adam Sandler and Chris Rock. When I got there was no Snoop Dogg. It was Michael Irvin, Nelly. I'm looking at fucking Burt Reynolds. I'm looking at the guy from Warriors in 48 Hours.
What a trip.
I'm looking at all these people going, oh, my God.
Cloris Leachman.
Oh. I go, when are they going to find out I'm a bust out and ask me to leave?
Yeah. That's how I feel.
Like I got $15 in my pocket. I'm sitting next to Michael Irvin and Burt Reynolds. I'm sitting across from Romanowski. I got all these fucking people around me. This guy over here, the fucking camera guy, the Australian guy was telling me earlier Mel Gibson jokes.
Wow.
He was the guy that did he was the camera guy on The Road Warrior.
Yeah.
And the first two, whatever the other one was.
What
was
Mad Max
and The Road Warrior. So this guy came up to me. We were talking. Like, are you Australian?
We're
talking. And I'm sitting in this room going, when is the fucking roof going to fall on my head?
Yeah.
Like, that's how you feel in those situations.
Yeah.
Especially when they come to you and tell you you did a good job.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Most times when the actors come up to you and go, bro, that was a good job.
Yeah. You still feel like that's going to happen? You still feel like the roof's coming down?
All the time. When I'm in a room like that, I always think the roof's going to fucking come down.
Do you think, like, Tom Cruise still feels like that?
I wonder.
Does Tom Cruise walk in now and he owns it after 20 years?
I hope so. I hope there is that. I hope there's that for him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
At some point, like, I hope everybody gets some sort of... Like,
butterflies?
Well, I think everyone does, but I would hope that you calm down or... I don't know. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's good to get butterflies, but it would be nice to be Marlon Brando and...
I always get butterflies at the Comedy Store.
You do?
No matter who's up in front of me.
Really?
To the point I have to bring an anxiety pill and put it in my fucking pocket.
Wow.
When I walk those stairs?
Yeah.
Those little 3 stairs?
Yeah.
It's lights out for Uncle Joey.
Weird, because you're so confident on stage. You know what I mean? Like, that's so odd that it's like that. I mean, I get that way every now and then. Every now and then, like...
The butterflies or the anxiety?
I don't know.
A little bit of both.
I feel like I get both.
I'm short-breathed when I get up to when I first get to the original, doesn't matter who's on stage.
Really?
No matter what I wrote, no matter what I think, as soon as I get to the original room and I sit in that little fucking section, Mitzi's chairs, my heart starts pounding. My breath goes out from under me. I can't catch my breath. One night I actually went to fucking the piano player. And I go, "Dog, tell Paulie my anxiety's too bad.
Really?
I got to get on stage." And he told Paulie, and Paulie comes back. He's like, "What's the matter, bro?" I go, "Paulie, she's got the fucking light. Do me a favor and go up there for me. Let me figure this out."
Huh.
I couldn't even breathe. I had like a wet towel on my
head. What is it? You
fear.
Really? And then, so on. If someone's crushing, I get that way. Like you last night when I followed you, I was like. I got to fucking all right. I don't want to be a piece of shit.
No, but you had such a good time. I see.
Yeah, it was fun.
Your
it was
face,
fun.
You
it was
were
fun.
Laughing. So I go, "Hey, it was a fun. Great time."
Yeah, I had a good set. But you know, if somebody's crushing, which you know,
9 out of 10 down there.
Yeah,
especially
right.
With the lineups now, everybody's crushing.
I know.
Whether it's
I'm either
Ron,
following
Ron
you
Lloyd.
Or Ali or fucking Bill Burr or fucking Sebastian. It's like so now I get it more often than I used to. But not if they're not crushing, if they're having a fine set, I'm like I'm good.
No, I'm dying back there.
Even that.
Whether you're bombing and getting booed, I'm more scared than you are. Like I'm back there going, "My son, Chris," you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like I'm worried about you.
Yeah.
Plus, I'm getting anxiety. So now, even last night at the store, I went up and Ali Wong was doing great.
Yeah,
I caught the first minute that I was up there, my heart was pounding.
Yeah, that's funny.
My stomach was growling.
Yeah,
and shit.
I did that too last night. But also, I often don't watch the guy before me because I got to be in the hallway. I don't want to have to watch it and then think things and then go up with a fucking mood. I should just be, you know. Tommy told me, the old manager of the Comedy Store would tell me, like, you should be in conversations with people before you go on stage. And I was like, dude, I think he's right, because like I wasn't thinking I'd be just talking, be like, "Oh, okay, I'll go on stage now," and just bring that energy.
I like to get fired up. I like people to fire me up a little bit. You really want me to do well? Do something that aggravates the fuck out of me. Like, don't, if you like, "Let's pray for Joey to bomb," don't aggravate me. Bring me like ice cream and shit or a sandwich.
Yeah.
But like if you want, like text me before I go on stage, I'll fucking go up there and blow that room apart. Like do something to me I don't like. I'll never forget.
You don't like getting texts? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't like none of that hilarious. Shit. That's why I disconnected the thing. Like I'm done. Wow. And it's funny. One night in San Francisco, I was bombing and I saw Rogan and Red Band had matching phones. And I'm like, "These motherfucking faggots." And I went on stage. I was so pissed at them for having matching phones. Rogan's like, "What the fuck happened to you?" I go, "You motherfuckers. You got matching fucking phones." I can't get pissed off.
That's
before.
Funny.
Like, if I get pissed about something before I go on stage, that's it. That's it. So I like the talk thing.
Yeah.
I like when somebody brings it out of me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like when somebody says something to you that gets you pissed off.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I like
yeah.
all that
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, that fuels you to be funny, sure. Yeah, especially if you're that kind of, you have that energy anyway to where it's like almost feels like you're arguing. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
When you're out there?
Yes.
So that's good for you for sure. I could see that.
I got to tell you, man, you just shocked me tonight because for a comic of 11 years, you have great maturity and composure up there.
Oh, thanks, man.
At 10 years, I wasn't doing what you were doing. Not at all.
Really?
Not at all.
Oh, thanks, man.
I didn't start doing that till like 17, 18 years. Like, you had me fucking fooled. Oh. I thought you started when you were like 18 and just hid up in Encino to, you know, fucking 24 up in some Greek restaurant hosting or some shit. You have great fucking composure
man. Thank you.
Where'd you get the name Man on Fire? Is that your favorite movie like me?
So, yeah. No, I do love the movie. But the reason was because of... I've always had this like notion where... Ever since I was a kid about how like... You could be so, like, sometimes you walk into a room and you're like, "All right, this is my fucking time to shine." Like, whatever the fuck you're doing, you walk into a cafe, feel that way. You're like, "I'm going to walk into this cafe and it's going to be I'm going to be the guy in the cafe. I'm the fucking guy who walks in this cafe and the cameras are on me." This is all in my head. But I walk in, I order a fucking sandwich and everybody knows I'm ordering a fucking sandwich and this is fucking, I'm going to eat the sandwich and this movie's about me. That's just what sometimes, and then you realize, nobody gives a fuck. They're all ordering their own shit. And they're all fucking, they all, and so, so I came up with this thing where I would be like, you're not fucking, who the fuck, I'm not Denzel Washington. Like, I'm fucking Chris D'Elia. I'm just some guy. To somebody else, I'm some guy. And so, the whole idea of like, you're not the man on fire. You're just the fucking guy who's going to get a bagel or whatever the fuck, was funny to me. And so I thought, what's the funniest movie to do that with? And I thought Denzel, it's gotta be a Denzel character because it made me laugh. And then I was like, oh, Man on Fire is great. And then one night on stage, I just said it. I was like, you're not the fucking Man on Fire. And I was like, I think that's it. I don't know. It was an idea that I like, besides the fact that I would make them, I would try and make the material funny. It was the idea behind that that I thought, oh, it kind of means something to me. So it made me charged to do the material, you know?
You're a fucking trip, man. What's next a lot for you, coming my brother?
I don't know. I'm doing, like we were talking about before this podcast, I've been enjoying doing my own podcast. I mean, I'm on episode 35 or something, but it's fun. It's fun to do my own podcast. It's called Congratulations. So I've been doing that. I have another TV show in development that I kind of shouldn't say too much about because I don't know what's happening with it yet. But so I'm doing that and then just working on stand-up. I got tour dates and shit.
Is that the YouTube Red
show? Yeah. So,
I think YouTube Red's going to be a great fucking channel.
Yeah, I do too, man. I walked into the meeting skeptical about, like, I don't know about, because, you know, you think YouTube, he's like, I just, like, I'll upload it myself. You know what I mean? But then they were talking about all the motherfuckers that they're working with, like the guys that, like, have shows coming out on there, like Doug Liman and shit. And, like, you're like, all right. I think honestly, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah. So,
I think it just makes sense.
Yeah.
And you tour how much a month now?
I mean, I like to do two weekends out
two
of the
month. Two weekends a month. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
I got this movie in May, and I had to reschedule a bunch of shit. And every time I had to reschedule, I was in Toronto for like 5 weeks, so I had to reschedule like two or three dates. And every time I do that, I'm like, whatever the club wants, just I feel bad. Like, and they all picked fucking September. So this month, I'm like killing myself every weekend. But yeah, I like to do like two a month, you know? And then I don't know. I'm working on material. I figure out. Do another special at some point, but like I've done three. I don't want to. I'm not trying to rush anything. You know what I mean?
Three. I've done one.
That's the only one you've done. Really?
Years, yeah. Everything else was just.
So when you go now, you
CDs.
Go. Oh yeah, yeah. So when you go now, you do new shit. Or you do some of the stuff from the special.
No, I'm done.
No, you're done. Yeah,
I'm done. That was the worst. That was the worst period of my life. After the special. AD after a special, bitch.
Yeah.
Those first 90 days were brutal.
It's tough.
Because you really want to kick that material. Yeah. You're like, I'm done with this.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you go back to it and you're like, damn it.
Yeah.
So for 3 months, you're wrestling with yourself. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I shot in October and I think I was a mess till February.
Wow.
February, I started getting my bearings back. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But before that, I was like, this is fucking yeah. starting from fucking
well, it's weird
zero.
Because now when you drop something, everybody fucking sees, if they're fans of yours, they see it in the first 3 days. So now if they're coming to see you in fucking Austin, they're like, where's the new shit? And you're like, ah, fuck. It's 3 days after my special came out. You know what I mean?
How fucking crazy.
I know. It's fucking crazy. They used to catch it on a Tuesday night at 9 o'clock. You know, maybe 10 people seen it in the fucking club. But now everybody's seen it.
And they're so getting them out quickly, too, now. Like, yours was out a couple months after you shot it?
6 weeks.
6 weeks?
No, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
6 weeks now.
Yeah. Wow. 6 weeks?
I shot October 19th. Christ. It came out December 6th.
That's insane.
I was in shock.
I thought mine was quick.
When they were like December 6th, I was like, what?
Wow.
Yeah, they started fucking editing that night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, as soon as they fucking. As soon as they just started editing that night.
So, yeah, I would assume, like, comedians used to have a lot longer to build the next hour because it had to get edited and then broadcast or in the movie theater, and that can take up to a year sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking next time to really write like an hour 45.
Right.
And then do
50.
I did that.
Keep 30 and go, at least I got something.
I did that after my second one. I had like so much other material, after my first one, something like that. But yeah, I had so much other material where I was like, I could just put this one on the second one. I think it was after the first one. Yeah, I did.
Where are you at this weekend?
I'm doing colleges. I'm doing Philly. I'll be in Philly and Dallas, but then I'm in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Next weekend.
In 2 weekends or something. Yeah.
So you got some time.
Yeah, I got finally. Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah.
And how was the movie you did?
It was good. It's actually called Life in a Year. I think it comes out at the beginning of next year, but it was Will Smith produced it. It was with Cara Delevingne and Jaden Smith and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s in it and me. It's a cool movie.
You like doing movies?
I mean, that was a drama. Okay, so
which
it,
is cool. People, I like those.
Yeah, yeah. I love doing it. I just want to do, like, if people are like, don't you want to do comedies? And you're like, I already do the best version of that. I do stand-up. I do what I think is the funniest shit already. What do I want to be in a fucking movie where there's seven guys and someone else wrote it? And then they're like, no, don't say it that way. Say it this way. The fuck are you talking about? I do stand-up.
That's not comedy.
I do stand-up. Like, I do the bio. Okay, cool. Let me shoot this. And then tomorrow, let me go play the fucking theater and do exactly what I want to do. So it's like, I only want to do stuff if it's like interesting to me. And this movie was. The character that I played was really interesting. And it's a drama. And I'm like, and so people are like, the movie's about Cara Delevingne is dying. And so people were like, did you have fun on the movie? It's like, it's not fun doing drama. That's not the right word, but it's definitely, it's interesting and it makes you feel a certain way that like, I'm happy I did it for sure. But it's not like, you know, you're doing scenes where like she's dying and you're crying and then it's like cut. And then you're like, oh, okay, let me go back to my trailer and just chill for a little bit. And so it's not like when you're shooting a comedy, it's just like everyone's fucking rambunctious and making fun of each other. But yeah, it was fun. I want to do drama. That's what I want to do. I want to do a lot of dramas. I want to do action. That's what I want to do the most is action.
Really?
Fuck yeah.
Would you be like the comedic relief in the action?
But it doesn't matter. Just I want to have a gun. I want to run after somebody on a bus. That's what I want to fucking do. I want to do that so fucking bad.
You're ready for Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
The remake, any, the movie.
Yeah, let me do it. I want to do it so bad.
How many movies have you worked on?
I don't know, seven,
six? And what do you like more, movies or TV?
I mean, TV's cool because it comes out quick. You know, like when you're on a show, it comes out every week. And then movies, I did a movie 3.5 years ago. It still didn't come out yet. We just got a distributor. And it's a fun, you know, it was a good movie. It's got a good cast. You know, it's like, what's happening with this shit?
How is it doing TV live? That must have been fun.
It was insane, yeah. It was so fun. I mean, if you're going to do a multi-camera sitcom, I think that's the way to do it. You know, it's just high octane. We shot it, and it aired while we shot it. I mean, it's insane.
The last season of Dateable, I think.
The last season of Dateable, yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, we would shoot it live, and millions of people would be watching it. And they were like, don't say fuck, because then NBC gets charged $7 million. And you're like, damn, I could fuck this up, you know? Yeah. So
I would die. I would say I can't handle
bro, we'd get the script. We'd get the script. No bullshit. Sometimes we get the script that day. The creator would be like, hey, sorry. And I'd be like, it's okay. But like, I remember looking at him, Bill Lawrence, the creator of the show, and being like, I'm going to try my best. Like, it's not like imagine saying that to like Steven Spielberg in a movie. He'd be like, oh, you're fired. But like, you're like, oh, I got the script today. All I can do is do my best.
That's what you could
do. You'd have monologues and shit. I said, I'll try my best. I remember saying, I'll try my best. And I remember him looking at me and saying, yeah, that's all I can ask for. And then we shoot at fucking 6 p.m. or whatever, live on the East Coast. And you're doing monologues and you're like, I think that's when you talk about like knowing the character, you wouldn't even memorize the lines. You just memorize the intonation and the idea of the line. Because you're like, as long as I know what the scene's about. Yeah, it was fucking crazy. So fun. You'd cut, we'd do one scene in a bar, cut to another, you're in the next scene, you have to run over, change your jacket, and be like, hey, what's up, guys? I'm just cooking food or whatever the fucking scene was. It was so funny. It was so fun. And then the audience loved it when they could see you fuck up, of course. You know, you're still putting on your jacket. There was one scene where the guy was still putting on his jacket. And, you know, it's fun. It was
now,
fun.
What was the last show to shoot that way? You were shooting, I know they had to drop history every
year. Yeah. I think the last one that did it, and I don't think they didn't do it, they didn't do every episode, but I think the last show that did it was that show. Remember that show Rock with Charles S. Dutton?
Yes.
They did. I think they did one or two episodes like that.
Right. 30 Rock did two.
Right. But that was not a multi-camera live sitcom with an audience.
Oh, go. Okay.
But yeah. Like ER did it too. But that's, you know, an hour drama.
Didn't Desi Arnaz do that shit?
Oh, yeah. Way back then. Yeah. That's how they did it. The Honeymooners and shit. I think that's how they did it. That's right.
Because I heard a story one time that was Ralph's main thing. That the Honeymooners would be on TV and he would never have the last scene. Or something crazy, he would run to the bar as the credits were rolling and fuck with the bartender.
Oh, gotcha.
So that was, sure if that was why. That I wasn't sure before I said it. That's why I wonder if they said, well, you guys are going to be in the elite history of TV shows. I know Ricky Ricardo did it. And he had three, because he started the Three Cranmer shoot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it wasn't for Ricky, was the one that said, why is there only one white guy with a camera?
Oh, really?
Let's put two more white guys and get the party started. Why aren't we fucking sitting here? So I know he had to be a three camera. I don't know what the Honeymooners was. I think the Honeymooners was one camera.
Maybe.
Like that. Chris, man, I wanted to have you on here for a long time. I think you're a interesting little motherfucker.
Thanks, man. No, I appreciate you. I always wanted to do it.
Fucking make me laugh my ass off.
Yeah, well, likewise.
I went down there early last night. Because I just saw the thing that Chris D'Elia, I go, let me go down there early. There's nothing I like more in the world. Like, nothing pisses me off more when I get really high. I go down there an hour and a half early and those back seats are taken.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
My fucking blood pressure boils. You understand me? Because nobody knows that I just want to go back there, sit. And if I could have a beard and a hat and like a fucking really, really 800-pound fat body, I would just sit back there at night. Because I don't understand if people know how much fun it is just to go back there sometime. Like, I love it. I love it. I'm a comic. I will. It's hard for me to watch specials and to watch every fucking show you're on.
Right.
But there's nothing that makes my dick harder. Like, when they call and go, you have 10:45, and I go, perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm going to take the baby swimming. I'm going to go eat dinner with them, and I'm getting the fuck out of there.
That's cool.
I'm going to sneak into the store with nobody seeing me.
Yeah.
I used to sit all the way in the back. I used to not sit in Mitzi's chairs.
In the back, like in the thing?
Yeah, I used to sit back there and have
really
pisses. That's way funny. Before you got there, one time, there was this chick called LaMare.
Mm-hmm.
LaMare was Mitzi's hair chick.
Jesus.
So one day Mitzi goes, you want to be a comic? Come to the store. So they passed her. LaMare was 50-something when she became a regular.
Mm-hmm.
But she was all patched up, head to toe, plastic surgery.
Oh, Jesus.
It was all rubber. Her face didn't even move anymore at the store. And one night I got really fucking stoned. And I just went back there, and I'm sitting in the back, and she's on stage, and she's, when you get stoned, I become your act. Like, that's the difference. When a comic gets high, and I go to see D'Elia, if D'Elia intrigues me, now I become D'Elia.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm on stage, and I'm cheering for D'Elia, and I'm cheering for her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she says this line. She goes, come on, people. Everybody thinks I do plastic surgery. I swear to God, I have never, ever, ever done a bit of plastic surgery. And in my reefer dull, I go, that's bullshit. Like, just... Just without even, I would never heckle another comic. Right, that is the most disrespect. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But my mind didn't even connect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
and she's like, who said that back then? And me and Tommy and a bunch of other comics were fucking howling because I didn't even realize I had said it.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I just fucking, but
it's
that's
the reaction.
That's why, because I was in there so deep. Like last night I was watching Allie, and I think I, who else? Ren Azizi.
Yeah.
And then they said, he ain't coming. You're running late. Do you want to go up? I go, all right, I'll fucking go up. I didn't even think you were going to show up. I thought, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's one of my favorite things in the world. That, to me, is how I learn comedy. I just sit back there. I watch 3-4 comics.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I abandon ship. Sometimes I don't even care if I go up. Sometimes I'm happy I didn't go up. I just went to learn.
That's cool.
And I always pick up a little something. That fucking night, you were talking about that little fucking hole at the on the airplane.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Supposed to shoot air.
Yeah.
Dog, you didn't hear me because I'm not one of those assholes from San Francisco comics. Always go, ha!
Oh, dude, that's
that
so
that drives
funny.
Me fucking
that
crazy.
You say San Francisco
You will
comics.
Never hear me. You will never ever hear me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you. I'll pull you over, D'Elia.
Yeah, yeah,
fucking killing me tonight. And when I tell you that is because I was bent over and I was howling. You're never going to hear me with that gorilla laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
I would never embarrass you. But that night when you were talking about the fucking hole,
because
one day I got really high on one of those edibles, and I'm sitting there looking at that hole for like an hour, and that very next day I go to the store, and you're going off on the hole, and I'm back there, wow! Like, this is what I mean. It just,
that's cool, man.
It, like when people say, well, I went to see a movie, and it was an escape. Let me tell you something, dog. I'm 54. I've never escaped in a movie. There's been like 3 or 4 movies
I hear
I've
you,
escaped
man.
That. But with stand-up comedy, I love when a comic takes me for a ride.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest with you. Lately, you're one of the few guys that takes me for a ride.
Thanks,
and that's
man.
Why I had you on the podcast, bro.
That means a lot coming from you.
No, man. No, you really inspire does. Me. Like, when I saw you at the Laugh Factory, I went home then and I said, well, I watched, because I wasn't going to go back to the store. They called me that Friday. Adam had called me, and I had a spot at the Laugh Factory. I saw you. I'm like, I don't know if I can handle that shit, following Delia. And then I watched that movie, Being There.
Yeah, I love it.
That's one of my all-time favorites.
Yeah.
And I said, maybe it's a sign from God. Maybe I should go back to the store.
Well, I'm fucking so glad you came back to the Comedy Store.
You're a fucking great guy. Well, you're a gentleman.
Thanks, man. Having you there, though, it fucking makes... I loved this Comedy Store already. Having you there, it's fucking awesome, man. It's fucking cool.
I love when you're down there, man. So thank you. Thank you for taking the time to come on the
show. Yeah, thank you, man.
It meant the world to me. I'm just going to give some shout-outs, read Blue Apron, and get you the fuck out of here. Pass that over to your Uncle Joey there. Thank you, brother. First of all, my girl Cleo, the One by One podcast, the Cobra Cats podcast. You're fucking doing great. They were voted the best of Austin.
Oh, very nice.
Lauren Rosenkirk, Greg and Lynn up in Seattle, Randy Bowman, Dr. Rocks, Quadrex, and Gaffa. I love you cocksuckers. Don't forget, I'm at the Pittsburgh Improv next weekend, the 28th of October 1st. Where are you at next weekend, Bubba?
Charlotte in 2 weeks, Charlotte.
That's a good fucking club.
Yeah, the Comedy Zone is awesome. Yeah,
I love that place. Let me talk to you people real quick about Blue Apron. I'll get you the hell out of here. Like I said at the beginning of the show, it's the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. Their mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody, okay? For less than $10 per meal, Blue Apron will deliver seasonal recipes along with proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Choose from a variety of new recipes each week, or let Blue Apron's culinary team just surprise you, just like that. Woo! Recipes are not repeated within a year, so you'll never get bored. Customize your recipes each week based on your preferences. You don't like broccoli? We won't send you broccoli. Blue Apron has several delivery options, so you can choose what fits your needs. And there's no weekly commitment, so you only get the deliveries when you want them. Each meal will come with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and proportioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. Who's better than you? You get home tired, bam, 40 fucking minutes you're eating. Blue Apron has a freshness guarantee that promises every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they'll make it right.
Amazing customer service.
Amazing customer service. This week's menu, soy glazed pork with rice cakes with bok choy and marinated green beans. Skillet vegetable chili with cornmeal and cheddar drop biscuits. That's just a few. Go to blueapron.com right now. Check out this week's menu, and I'm going to give you your first three meals for free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/Joey. You're going to love how good it tastes, how good it feels to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com/Joey, all right? Blue Apron, a better way to cook. And don't forget Onnit.com for all your supplements, whether you got Shroom Tech or fucking Hemp Force Protein or Strong Bone, they're there for you. Go to Onnit.com right now and press
Church.
Bam! And get 10% off, bitches, delivered right to your house. I want to thank Chris D'Elia again.
Thank you.
I want to thank my little brother, Lee Syatt. And I want to thank you fucking savages for listening and for being family. Like I said, I'll see you next week at the Pittsburgh Improv. Also, thank you very much for the donations for my niece. She's up to 17 grand. You guys, I can't ever repay you. So thank you very much. I'll be in Philly next weekend visiting her at the hospital. So thank you for brightening up her spirits and whatnot. She even called me the other day and said, fucking the Flying Jew donated. I said, Lee's a bad motherfucker. Thank you for listening. I want to thank my brother, Chris D'Elia. Chris, where can they find your dates at?
ChrisD'Elia.com.
That's fucking easy.
Yep.
Love you, motherfuckers. Have a great weekend. Stay black. What did we decide on?
The OJs.
Oh, shit. Happy Rosh Hashanah to all the Jews in the struggle.
Money, 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 money done.